I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl and Sarah, and welcome to the Halftime Report. I am Courtney Reagan in today for Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, navigating the pullbacks as signs of slowing economy plus Meta's meltdown really slams stocks. Our investment committee, though, of course, standing by to help break it all down for you. Joining me this hour, Shaman Sakosha, Jason Snipe, and Jim Labenthal. We're going to have so much more in Meta's 12% drop. That's coming up. But first, we really have to start with the broader market sell-off. As you can see here, the Dow down more than 550 points. Stocks falling hard as today's GDP report shows a sharp slowdown in growth and a pickup in inflation. So let's take a look at where we are right now. When you're looking at the major sectors, communication services down the most, down about 5%, which makes sense because of Meta, which, again, we're going to get into. Consumer discretionary down about 1%. We do have two sectors, though, that are hanging onto the green, albeit just barely, with utilities and materials. But, wow, I mean, what a report. Shannon, I'll start with you. I mean, when we got this GDP report, pretty surprising, below consensus, below, well below certainly where we were last quarter. What does it make you think?
Well, and I think there's a difference between being concerned about sort of the top line missing, because, you know, we could actually see that be revised up over the course of the next couple of weeks. But I think the challenge is that the data show that the inflation that we're seeing on a month over month basis for CPI is also showing up in PCE in this report. Mm. And even when you look at the consumer, you saw a decline in goods spending, which, admittedly, we've seen, you know, very little goods inflation. We've certainly seen slowing in terms of goods spending from the consumer perspective. And, you know, it was in particular autos where you saw that decline over the quarter. And I know we're going to discuss that later in the show. But I think most concerning is that even when you looked at services spending, the growth in services spending were from areas where we've seen meaningful inflation. Mm. So that super core inflation in areas like insurance, in healthcare, those are not particularly predictive of stronger consumer demand. And so I think the challenge here is not just the top line, but the bottom line in terms of where we saw the consumer spending. They're spending on things that are rather non-discretionary. And I think a lot of the consumer enthusiasm and the resilience, if you will, of the last 12 to 15 months has really been on the discretionary side. And so I think that's what's creating some of the concern. Admittedly, there were a few bright spots. I just want to be balanced in my assessment. You know, we did see a pickup in residential spending. We saw a pickup in fixed asset investment. So parts of the economy, perhaps in this kind of these rolling cycles that we've experienced, are seeing some more strength. But I think the underlying data indicates that maybe there is a little bit more weakness in the consumer than what we've been seeing over the last 15 months.
Jason, I found it interesting, though, that Visa's report was actually pretty strong after the bell yesterday. Right. When we're talking about spending, travel was sort of a hot spot. Again, I know that falls in services and not so much goods. But what did you make of then when you heard this GDP report today?
Yeah, so I mean, to Shannon's point, I think it was concerning, clearly. I mean, you know, core PCE at 3.7%. The expectation was 3.4%. I think, you know, for us, it's just the trend that obviously we've been seeing over the last few months. I think when we've looked at CPI and PPI a couple of weeks back, you know, the hope was for somewhat of a benign PCE print tomorrow. And when we see some of the numbers that we saw today, maybe that is a read-through to what we might see tomorrow. And I think that's a concern. Obviously, yields have been pushing up, which is obviously concerning as well, and that's what you're seeing with some of the price action that we've witnessed over the last few days. But, you know, earlier this week we saw a nice bump, right? So we're getting close to back to where we were on Monday. So a lot of churn here, but I think it's part of the course, right? But you know, I'm really looking forward to what we'll see this evening with Google and Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jim, and then of course Jason points out PCE tomorrow. Been a very important number for the Fed. That's the one that they're really focused on. Does this put even more significance on that number tomorrow?
It's very significant, but the nuance of the PCE, which we all know, is it comes out at the end of the month, after you've got CPI, after you've got PPI. Right. And I think Jason's exactly right. It's likely to come in hotter than expectations. We have to remember, though, this is for the month of March. We're at the end of April. That's the nuance of the PCE. So at this point, the markets, whether it's fixed income or stock market, understands that we've had 3 months of bad inflation reports. I think the thing we all need to do now is start looking forward. What's going to happen in April? Now, next week we'll get the labor report. That's always the first. The nuance of the labor report is it's the first indication of the prior month's inflation readings. And it's not a direct reading. It's the average hourly earnings growth that you look for. But my point here is that it's time to pivot to looking at what March's numbers are going to be as reported in April. That's what the Fed's going to do. So I don't think the Fed is looking at the PCE and expecting some epiphany moment. The Fed has, as of last week, Jay Powell said, we're going to stay higher for even longer than anyone expected. And the markets, particularly the stock market, now is in the adjustment period to that. I think, Courtney, it might have been a little naive for any of us to have said that after Monday's rally, or maybe it was Tuesday's rally, that we're all in the clear. That was a little bit naive. On the other hand, folks, I don't think you're going to get even the full 10% pullback of a correction. The reason I say that, this economy really is strong, let alone, you know, put aside the 1.6% GDP. Look at those initial jobless claims. Look at the continuing jobless claims. The labor market is very healthy, and that is the engine of growth for this economy, which in turn will generate profit growth for stocks to hang on to.
Jim. And can I just add, I really want to amplify something that Jim just said. The economy remains strong. So, albeit we get a bit of a weaker print here, the underlying data still is pointing to growth in the economy. And I think that the challenge is that, especially with Chair Powell's statements last week, he's indicating that every single data point is important to them. And so the market is digesting every single data point as being incredibly illustrative of what the Fed is going to do. But the reality is that from yesterday to today, some of these underlying fundamentals for the economy haven't necessarily changed. It's just what, and this is all backwards looking. And so I think the important thing is as we go through the rest of the show, we're thinking about what the companies are saying, you know, corroborating the macro with the micro.
Sure.
That's really the important piece right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get there. But we also want to talk to Steve Liesman and see, really, Steve, what do you think, I mean, today's data means for the Fed? They have to put it all together in this sort of data soup, right? Some pieces are hot, some pieces are cold. So how does it net out? I mean, what's Jay Powell thinking?
Yeah, and how light are the matzo balls? That's really the question that a lot of people are asking right now. Courtney, this is an important question within my family. Look, I separate this into, I guess you call it the soup and the matzo balls are really two different pieces here. There's the inflation part of the report and there's the growth part of the report. The growth part of the report does not concern me. The weakness that Shannon spoke of is real. It is down. But if I'm not mistaken, it's the weakness that we had wanted, right? Mm-hmm. We had wanted to see the economy cool. The weakness was all part of that beautiful, fabulous soft landing scenario that everybody had coveted. And we got a little bit of it, but really it was pretty strong. If you look at the GDP report, take out the trade and the inventory subtractions, which were 1.1%. Look at real final domestic purchases. It's 2.8%, down from where it was in the fourth quarter, which is what we expected. Yeah, there was some issues inside the consumer spending that Sharon is absolutely right to point out. But overall, kind of cranking along on the growth side. It's the inflation part of the story that is the problem. And there I got to bifurcate one more time, which is what everybody wants to know tomorrow is where the surprise is coming from. Tomorrow at 8:30, what you want to listen for is, does Rick come on and say that the PCE for March came in at 0.3, but the higher inflation numbers that we got came from an upward revision to January and February? That's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario, which I cannot rule out, is that Rick comes on and says, this is 0.4 or even high in the 0.4s. That tells you that the inflation problem we had continued into March. And I'll give you one more answer to a question you didn't ask, which is, how does the Fed respond to all this? The Fed says, you know what? Our top case, our worst case for rates is higher for longer. It is not a hike, not at this time. So I think that what happens tomorrow, if that inflation number comes in hot, is the Fed will say, okay, I am going to stick with these higher restrictive rates for a longer period of time. But watch how that number comes in tomorrow. If it's a upward revision to January, February, that's a better scenario than if March was hot.
Hey, Steve, it's Jimmy. How are you? You know, I love watching you and Rick in the morning. The repartee you guys have is great. And this morning I watched you, and he used the word stagflation, and it caught me by surprise because, you know, I remember the 70s. I'm old enough to remember it. And this doesn't feel like the 70s. But on the other hand, I wonder if he has a point. Did you, and I'm not trying to start a spat between you and Rick, but when you heard him use that term, what did you think? Did you think it was maybe a little premature?
Jim, a couple notes. First of all, we don't need you to start a spat between us. We're more than capable of doing that on our own.
You sense I'm trying to be
That's gentle, one here, right? Two is we all need to remark how great you look for a guy that remembers personally the 70s, okay? That's two. Three is an answer, an actual answer to your question. We are a very long way from stagflation. 2.8% real final domestic purchases. Look, when you do bad trade numbers, right? You took off 0.9% for trade. What happened? We imported a lot of stuff. Well, ask Courtney if all of her retailers who are doing that importing are wrong. Now, there's a danger there. There's a danger there they get caught with stuff. And by the way, there's a lot of pricing fudging going on here that we don't really know. It's very hard to predict how they did the pricing on it. But in any event, if they got caught with a lot of stuff, those imports could be a sign of confidence on the part of those doing the importing in future consumer sales. So we don't have the stag part yet. And I think Rick was a little bit jumping the gun on that. We can argue about that tomorrow, because I don't think he was able at that moment to look at the real final domestic purchases. In other words, taking out the inventories, which a couple of economists I talked to were really surprised. They thought we'd get a build in the inventories. Instead, we got a subtraction on the inventories. So that was a big swing factor. And where did that swing factor come? If you really want to be down in the weeds, it's in the price adjustment. There were more prices in there than was expected. So that was why you had that negative came off, but minus 0.35 off the top. So that was something that I think you could discount. I see the economy cooling gradually. That's what we wanted. That's the soft landing. I'm not seeing the inflation. However, if you want to pick an optimistic scenario, it may well be this modest cooling in the economy that gives us down the road, later than we expected, the cooling in inflation that we also hope for.
Fascinating stuff, Steve. Thank you so much. It's great to hear your analysis, and I know we're going to tune in to hear what you have to say the rest of the day today, and of course tomorrow. PCE, really, really important. Jason, what do you make of Steve's analysis there? He's not so concerned about that GDP number at all.
Yeah. And I think Steve obviously made a lot of great points there. The one place that I do turn to, I think business spending has been good and strong. A little bit of softness in consumer spend. Again, it's 70% of the economy, but it's still holding up fairly well. So I get it, and I agree with Steve in the fact that the inflationary numbers are the larger concern. The GDP. Not as big a concern for me. So I agree largely with what he just said.
Shannon, it's fascinating with inflation. I mean, we all gripe about it, but consumer spending has really held up, right?
Yes.
Even in areas that might be discretionary.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, and that we continue to grapple with this divergence, right?
Sure.
Between lower income consumers and middle income and higher income consumers. And, you know, I think the CEO of Kava was on right before program and was talking about consumers buying what they want to buy and maybe holding back on things that they're not so interested in. And so what I think you're seeing is some discipline in the part of consumers over the course of the last several months, and also, you know, an impediment on some larger goods buying. So if you think about used and new cars, rates are still really high for auto loans. And so that lower income contingent of the economy is not able or does not feel comfortable going out and buying a car. And so I think you're seeing that in the kind of the large durables. But from a consumer perspective, then you see reports from the likes of Royal Caribbean, right? Very strong in terms of, you know, bookings. And so I think there's still a demand level that is consistent with growth this year in the U.S. economy. And I think that's what people really need to focus on rather than some of this quarter by quarter, month by month dislocation in certain numbers or certain parts of the industry.
Fair enough. And we could go into that more, but I actually have to jump because we've got some breaking news out of Washington on net neutrality. Megan Casella has the details. Megan, what's going on?
Hey, Courtney. So the FCC just voted to reinstate rules on net neutrality. This makes it official that internet service providers have to treat all internet traffic the same. Now, this was originally passed under President Obama to level the playing field on the internet. President Trump rescinded this in 2017, and it's really been a priority for President Biden to restore this. This was a 3-2 vote. It's a win for big tech companies that really supported this. That's Meta, Amazon, Google's parent Alphabet. Comcast supported this too. But it's a blow to the critics that really called it excessive regulation, argued that it could stifle innovation. The group U.S. Telecom includes Verizon and AT&T as its members. They say that reinstating rules will be counterproductive and anti-consumer. Now, Courtney, it's possible we could see further legal challenges here, but the FCC says they believe this can pass legal muster, and they say they hope that this is the last time the FCC has to address this topic. Courtney?
Well, thanks, Megan. It's interesting bringing it to us. We've talked about that for so many administrations, right? We were in the third administration to sort of tackle this issue. Thank you so much. You mentioned some of the big tech companies, Megan, so let's get to our chart of the day. It is the Meta meltdown. Shares under pressure on weak revenue guidance and higher CapEx costs. Investment committee member Bill Baruch has, or was at least, adding to his position ahead of the print, I should say. He joins us now. I mean, Bill, what do you make of those Meta results? And I guess particularly the AI investment spending going forward, which Mark Zuckerberg himself said, look, this could take a while to really see the revenue payoff.
Yeah, I think Zuckerberg just hit it right on. I mean, he addressed the issue, the elephant in the room, the spending that it's going to take. The reality is it's an AI arms race, and they need to spend. If they don't spend, they're going to fall behind. So what are they guided, what, about $500 million below estimates for quarter two. They're going to do 140 or have done 140 billion in revenue over the last four quarters. Overall, the full year guidance, you know, was about $1 billion below estimates, or $1 billion more than estimates on expenditure. So they're spending more. They're going to take in a little less. The market didn't like it. We've seen that from some of the previous reports. But again, this is an AI arms race, and the important thing is to keep spending. Now, I'm not sitting here and adding today. I'm happy that we added when we did. And you know what? And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But we also added Tesla on Monday, too, and that turned out to be a one that turned out pretty good. And let's also not forget, 98% of Meta's revenue comes from advertising. And we're in an election year, and that's going to be pretty critical. I think that could be a good tailwind with some better beats. Maybe they're laying the bar pretty low here right now.
So just to be clear, you added to your position ahead of the results, but you're not taking advantage of the sell-off today to continue to do so.
Well, I want to see where we settle out. I don't need to chase things around. I think there's really solid support at the previous gap, 395 area. I'm also watching 435. If we can close above 435 on the week, I think that would be a pretty good, pretty good hold of the low, and that could bring some tailwinds as well. Now, again, this was in the bottom 10 of our portfolio. It's now in the middle, and so we're still underweight Meta. I do want to add, but the thing is, too, what else do you own? And the AI arms race, the spending here is not just Meta spending money. I mean, this is the hyperscalers. We're going to get news from Alphabet and Microsoft later today. Look at NVIDIA. It's up 2.5% today, because where does that spending go? It's going to NVIDIA. And NVIDIA is one of our top holdings as well. So this is really looking at the pie and how you're going to position within AI to take advantage of that. And that's what we're doing here right now.
It certainly looks like more of an investment, perhaps, than a trade. Bill, we're going to let you go, but thank you for joining us here on this one. And Jim, what do you make of this? I got to just dig into this one a little bit.
When you see a stock that's down 11-odd percent, that means one of two things usually, okay? It means something dramatically has gone wrong at the company, or there's something going on in the economy that's much worse than people expected. Folks, I don't see either of that happening here, okay? And for that reason, I think this is a massive overreaction. Now, I don't own the stock. I'm not a big fan of social media, but putting that aside, I can look at this stock and I can say it's attractively priced. I think the reason it's down so much today is maybe people are worried that this is an echo of 2022 when Meta was spending too much. Mm. I think, however, Mr. Zuckerberg and his team got the message and changed tune in 2023. I think they are pivoting to be on the balls of their feet and they want to invest in their company. I think this is very much an overreaction.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like if you're a long-term investor, you want them to put their money into AI. That's where everything is. And maybe it's going to stumble for a while. It'll take a while to see the payoffs. Walmart is obviously so very different than Meta, but I remember when Doug McMillon came out and said, look, we're going to invest in digital. Digital is the future. It sort of shocked everybody because of the amount of money that they put into it. But years later, I mean, that was the exact right thing to do. Jason, what do you make of Meta? And Zuckerberg's, frankly, being really honest, sort of like laying it all out on the table.
Right, 100%. I think for me, one, the quarter was solid.
Sure.
I mean, revenue was up 27% year over year. Net income was a double, right? You know, but I think it's to Jimmy's point. I think the market is looking at is that when he talked about the metaverse spend, that $10 billion number, I think the market didn't respond well. And then he coined the year of efficiency last year and made all the changes that he needed to make for operational efficiencies. Headcount on still down 10%. Mm-hmm. And Bill is right. I mean, the arms race is real. Meta has to make this investment in terms to remain competitive in this space. And I think it will play out. I think Zuckerberg has earned our right to respect his moves and where he is and what his vision is in terms of implementation. And I also think for engagement, for the use case for AI, I think it plays very well out for Meta.
Shannon, you've been sort of nodding your head all along. It feels like you think investment is the right thing, despite the reaction in the stock price today.
Yeah, I think, you know, to use Jim's term naive earlier, I mean, we would be naive to look at what happened last year and think that there wouldn't have to be spend to monetize this excitement over AI. And this is not going to be just for, you know, big cap tech companies today. It's going to be for every other company that's going to want to utilize AI over the next several years. And so this idea of CapEx around AI, it's not going to come for free. And I think people are also discounting a little bit, you know, what's available here, $50 to $65 billion in free cash flow this year. You have WhatsApp, which certainly is not, could be scaled further. You have a continued engaged younger cohort in Instagram, which could potentially benefit from what's happening with TikTok, right?
I was just going
to
say,
you know, there are a lot of things here just from a competitive perspective. And I think, again, I think the reaction would be, I'm surprised at the depth of the reaction today because I think the reaction, this is a reaction that I think I would have seen if we hadn't had a good year last year in terms of showing an ability to be austere when appropriate from Zuckerberg and team. So for me, I agree with Jim. I mean, you know, I just think that there's a lot under the surface here, that there's an opportunity, but that, again, this can be extrapolated across the number of other companies, just knowing that CapEx is going to have to increase if you want to benefit from AI.
It will be interesting to see what happens with the stock action in the days to come and if some of this sort of gets pulled back. Well, tech's next test comes after the bell. We're going to hear from Alphabet and Microsoft. They're reporting AI-related revenue and costs. Of course, it's going to be front and center. What else, right? Full team coverage standing by ahead of these critical reports. Steve Kovac is tracking the action in Microsoft. Well, let's start with Deirdre Bosa as we count down to Alphabet. What are your expectations here, Dee?
Courtney, I've been listening to your guys' conversations intently. Zuckerberg raising these concerns over Gen AI costs and monetization, that applies for Google as well. Revenue contribution, it's still unclear, but for Google at least, it is expected to show up to some extent in the cloud. Meanwhile, continues to spend big as well. CFO Ruth Porat warning that CapEx spend will be larger this year than last. The biggest question, though, facing Google is its innovator's dilemma. How does Sundar Pichai protect its cash cow, search ads, while embracing Gen AI and chatbots? That is certainly not going to be answered this quarter, but look to core search advertising numbers for hints of that. That's what sank the stock last quarter when those advertising numbers were lower than expected, and some investors thought, uh-oh, Gen AI is starting to have an effect, pull traffic away from the traditional search. Remember, too, Google also needs a new CFO, Ruth Porat. She moved into a new position, CIO and president, almost a year ago, and they still don't have one. So potentially an announcement tonight. We'll certainly be listening. Finally, and maybe a very small chance of this, some are looking tonight for a dividend, especially after Meta surprised markets earlier this year by issuing one that could, if Alphabet did that, offset some concerns around AI spending. Google certainly has a cash pile and the free cash flow to do so, but it has withheld for a very long time. Does do a buyback, though. Court.
Great stuff. Thank you, Dee. Jim, what are you expecting? You're a shareholder.
Yeah, I am not expecting any sort of reaction in either name, Microsoft or Google, like we saw in Meta.
Okay.
Now, look, we could make an argument, and I'm not going to make this very strongly, that the multiple differential between Microsoft and Google is too wide. But if that corrects by maybe Microsoft's multiple coming down, maybe Google's coming up, I don't think these are going to be dramatic moves. Remember, at both companies, while people are going to be focused on AI, they all have irons in the fire besides this. You know, you've got the web services and the basic software business at Microsoft. You've got the basic search businesses and web services at Google, not to mention YouTube and all the moonshots. So I'm expecting actually no fireworks here. I hope that's not, to use the word, Shannon, do you want to use it?
Naive.
Yeah, I hope that's not naive.
Jason, you're also an owner here. What do you want to hear from this report?
You know, clearly, I definitely want to hear about AI and use cases, how Gemini is performing. I think YouTube search will be perfectly fine. You know, the other highlight for me is obviously advertising. Advertising was 60 plus billion in revenue last quarter. It was up almost 11% last quarter, and I think we don't talk about that enough. Bill mentioned earlier, it's an election season. I think that that'll serve as a catalyst for Google as well. So I expect the print to be solid. And to Jimmy's point, I don't think we'll see a blow up like we saw with Meta. I do think the print will all around be good.
And it sold off a little bit too.
Like
I was going to say, I was a little worried about
sorry,
that.
Folks.
I mean, it has sold off a little bit too. You know, with
Google?
Meta. So
Google. I mean, it's 4% off of its all-time high, right?
Good point. Good point.
No, I don't mean to, because exactly, I saw the down today. I'm like, wow, man, it must be having a terrible year. Google's having a fabulous year. It can give a little back.
Fair enough. Okay, let's get over to Steve Kovac, because now he's going to tell us what investors need to watch when Microsoft results hit the tape. What are we going to hear, Steve?
Hey, Court. Yeah, the big thing question going into this print is, where does the AI money come from Microsoft? You've got to look at the cloud, though, not necessarily Copilot. Microsoft has been really quiet about its marquee AI product, Copilot, which it sells to businesses for a hefty price of $30 per user per month. Still don't know how well it's selling or if it's really living up to that promise to massively boost worker productivity. So we have to look at Azure cloud business instead. Growth there had slowed through 2022 and 2023 as Microsoft helped customers cut cloud costs when everyone was worried about that impending recession that never materialized. Growth reaccelerated, though, over the last couple quarters. You see that tick up in the chart I'm showing you here. In part, that's thanks to AI. OpenAI and other AI companies run their services on Azure, which means more money for Microsoft the more AI activities going on. For the December quarter, Microsoft said 6 percentage points of Azure growth came directly from AI. So we're going to be watching that number to grow, Court.
Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it. Jim, you're in this one, too. Expectations seem pretty high.
And you could say that in the multiple being roughly 32 times forward earnings. And as I was just saying a second ago, maybe that's a touch heavy. Maybe it's a touch expensive. But I don't think that there's anything fatal in terms of that valuation. Look, it's possible that the AI hype is a little bit ahead of itself. But let me stress the words little ahead of itself. This is not something where you should expect a major course correction, either in the share price or the business strategy after the results today.
All right, fair enough. Well, straight ahead, much more on today's sell-off, including a big move in Caterpillar, the stock sharply lower on earnings. We do have ownership on the desk, so we'll break down that trade coming up next. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Halftime. Let's hit some committee stocks on the move. Caterpillar, down big following earnings. It was a mixed report. The company beating earnings estimates, but revenues missed. Caterpillar also saying it expects sales to be lower year over year for the second quarter. Jason, this is one of yours.
Yeah, so I mean, Caterpillar has been a rocket ship over the last year and some change. You know, obviously some concern about the miss on the top. It was a beat on the bottom. There's still healthy demand for their products. You know, in particular, data center builds, which is really important for them. You know, as I look forward and I think the concern for me also was about inventories. Mm-hmm. Inventories were okay. I mean, sales are slowing, but price realization was better than expected. So, I still want to hold on to this one. I think it's kind of about this whole infrastructure, fiscal, all that's going into the economy, and I think Caterpillar will continue to benefit from that.
Okay. Well, next up is Union Pacific, bucking the broad market sell-off and moving higher. The company beating estimates and updating its profit outlook for the year. Jim, this is yours.
Yeah, the solid industrial here. Chugging along, pun intended, sorry. The commentary was pretty positive. They're starting a share repurchase. They feel good about the future. The only thing here is I'm not sure how much gains we have from here. I'm not rushing to add to the stock here. It trades at roughly 21 times this year's earnings. And at the end of the day, this is a railroad. Now, I think the underlying strength comes from all the capital expenditures going on in the economy on things like infrastructure, things like factories being built for supply chain onshoring. That's a lot of material that needs to be moved by Union Pacific. At 21 times, this might be fair value here.
Okay. And Shannon, you like industrials generally.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity here. I mean, we're seeing, you know, we were in essentially a manufacturing recession here in the United States and globally for, you know, the last 15 months or so. And we're starting to see that reaccelerate. And I think if you think about the necessity of infrastructure build, not only here, but outside of the United States for not just, you know, kind of, you know, day to day, but also for security, for, you know, some of this AI build, I think there's an opportunity here. I think that, you know, there are going to be some ebbs and flows in terms of demand. And so I'm not surprised to see the reaction here with Caterpillar, but I think that that is something that we, you know, we need to be looking more like 12, 18, 24 months out and seeing the way that the global manufacturing economy is turning.
Okay. And finally, ServiceNow narrowly beating estimates, also giving full year guidance that matched expectations. Jason, this is one of yours.
Yeah, so I think with ServiceNow, listen, it was still a triple play. You know, they beat on the top and the bottom and raised the guidance. I think the concern for the market is the guy was a little lighter than what was anticipated. Mm-hmm. I think that's what a little bit of the setoff we've seen. But, you know, when I think about automated workflows and the business that they're in, and I think about the AI application, you know, we keep talking about use cases. I really think this will work well for Bill McDermott and the team, so mm-hmm. I continue to like this one.
Shannon, you have some thoughts on ServiceNow?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really was all about the second quarter guide. I mean, if you look at the first quarter, ServiceNow said that this would be a second half of the year story for them. Mm-hmm. And I think if you think about what that means is that there is a little bit of sort of near-term concern about the spending on optimization and being able to come in and partner with these companies. But from an overall perspective, they reiterated full-year guidance and they reiterated profitability, which I think is really important in this environment, where people are looking for quality companies that are able to drive better margins.
Look at that, reiterating profitability, something we haven't heard a lot of. Let's get headlines with Bertha Coombs right now. Hi, Bertha, how are you?
Hi, Courtney. Oral arguments continue this afternoon at the Supreme Court over the question of whether former President Trump has absolute immunity from prosecution for his actions trying to remain in power after the 2020 election. Much of the discussion between the justices and lawyers has focused on whether there is absolute immunity for official acts. The former president's federal trial on election interference remains on hold until the Supreme Court issues a ruling. The EPA has set a new rule that would force coal-fired power plants to capture emissions or shut down. Coal plants that plan to stay in operation past 2039 would have to capture 90% of their carbon dioxide emissions by 2032. It's the first time the U.S. has restricted emissions from existing plants. And the first cargo ship has passed through a newly built deep water channel in Baltimore. The port's main channel is set to reopen next month once the container ship Dolly that slammed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge is removed. Courtney, back over to you.
Interesting stuff, Bertha. Thank you. Well, coming up, more on this market sell-off. We're all over today's volatile trading. We are off the lows of the session, at least. We'll break down the key things investors need to be watching. Halftime's back right after this. We're back on halftime and tracking the pullback on Wall Street today, but we are off our lows, at least right now. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is lower by several hundred points here, but obviously much better than we were. Bob, what do you think is happening here? I guess the big reason for the sell-off this morning was that GDP number, lower GDP, hotter inflation. Obviously, Meta's results were crummy. The Dow down now, though, 472. So coming back, at least, what's the reason?
Well, I think people are taking a closer look at the GDP numbers. This was really hard to figure out. Even Leisman, who's the master,
I listened
very carefully to him.
Yeah, he seemed less worried when he went through the details.
That's right. Consumer spending, what we have, up 2.5. Biz spending up 3.2. I think you were referencing that. So something's a little off here. And this is the big question here. Is this a one-off or is this start of
trend,
a bigger macro trend here? I like to follow the pain trade. I love the pain trade. The pain trade is what would make the greatest number of people really uncomfortable. And the pain trade is what happened today. No one was positioned for slower growth with sticky inflation. Mm-hmm. Everyone was persistent, was around for steady growth and inflation slowly coming down. Mm-hmm. So we're in a difficult situation. So tomorrow, look what we've got. The PC is really important now. So we're working with 0.3% month over month, 2.7 year over year. Mm-hmm. So here's, it's very clear what's going to happen. If it comes in benign, benign's got to be in there or below those numbers or below, sigh of relief. Everybody's going to say, okay, we can have slightly slower growth, but the Fed's going to cut. Right. But if it comes in, we get 0.5%, heaven forbid, or something like that, or 3% year over year, everyone's going to say, oh my gosh, now the Fed is in a really impossible situation. Economy's maybe a little slower, but they can't cut because inflation's too high.
Right.
Now you're in a bad position. The market will definitely be down on that. So let's hope for a more benign number. What's really going on here is the multiples coming down. If you look at the earnings reports, they're actually pretty good. We can talk about it if you want, but I look at it pretty carefully, and they're not that bad. There's a few outliers, yes, Meta, maybe Caterpillar a little bit, but by and large, the numbers are stable for the full year. They're mostly affirming their full year guidance. So what's coming down is the multiple. They're saying, wait a minute, we may have slower growth and sticky inflation. We're not going to pay 20 times forward earnings for that. You don't get a high multiple for that. You get lower growth, you get the multiple goes down. So you can have earnings stay up, but the multiple comes down. And that's what we're seeing right now. If those earnings numbers start coming down, those full year numbers, oh, heavens, we're going to be in the mid 4,000s on the S&P very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Meta down really substantially. It seems like everyone on the desk, at least, believes it's a bit of an overreaction to be down 12%. And we're going to hear from Alphabet and Microsoft after the bell. So hopefully we won't see the same fate, because that could really tug on what's going on with the market.
Right. So this all tells you about crowded trades and things like that. I mean, Meta has been investing money in AI for ages. He smartly pulled back on the spend. Now he reaffirmed it. There's the story. So they were betting on the numbers were coming down. Basically, less spend means more money for the bottom line. Sure. And so people who invest made certain assumptions about this. I don't think we should get too involved in Meta. I'm looking at the big, big picture. I look at some of these companies reporting Tractor Supply. The consumer has been resilient. Look at these numbers. Customer base is healthy and engaged. The CEO of Tractor Supply says. Chipotle, we are not seeing any consumer pullback.
Right.
D.R.
Horton,
homebuyer demand remains strong. Visa, these are the people I really watch.
Yeah, the Visa numbers
are good. Visa, consumer spend across all segments from low to high has remained stable. American Express, strong spending trends.
Yeah,
what else do you want?
I found all of that very interesting, and then the interesting juxtaposition with this GDP report this morning. Well, thank you, Bob.
Right,
keep
pleasure.
Us updated, especially here if this rubric
opens.
Yeah,
we're waiting here any minute now.
It's getting closer.
Rubric.
Well, up next, your pullback playbook. The committee spotting some big opportunities in today's sell-off. Where they're looking, that's coming up next. We're back on Halftime. Stocks pulling back today, and that got us thinking, where are the big opportunities in this sell-off? Our investment committee has a few things on their watch list, actually. Jim, I'm going to start with you. Where can you take advantage of some of these pullbacks today?
Well, what I'm looking at, Courtney, is big cap tech. The last few weeks, we've seen a pullback. I mean, Shannon, I know you're chuckling there. I think you agree with me. You've seen a pullback. I mean, we're looking at Meta today. That's not on my list. What's on my list is semi-cap equipment company, AMAT, semi-cap company like NVIDIA. You know, stock was up at 974 not that long ago. Now it's whatever it is, 820. Amazon, I've added to that, but would add more to that. And the other one, this one may catch somebody by surprise, but Apple. You know, the Worldwide Developer Conference is going to be early June, and I think the market's going to start anticipating that, running into whatever they say about AI, running the stock up probably a month beforehand. So, you know, early May, I want to have a bigger position in Apple before early May.
Jason, what ideas do you have?
Yeah, so for us, I mean, it's not pulling back today, but we talked about it on the show earlier this week, Uber. We really like Uber. You know, they got a compound annual growth rate in EBITDA of 30 to 40% in the next few years. I mean, gross bookings are up 22%, mobility up close to 30%. It's a stock that we've been watching for a while. It's pulled back some, obviously not today, but I just feel like Dara has really set a new stage for this company, and it's a company that we really like and will look to add on pullbacks.
And there was a move there after Tesla reported, you know, talking about the robo-taxi a little
100%.
Bit there too.
Yep.
Shannon, what about you? What's your pullback playbook?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the shifting leadership, if you will, over the course of this year so far, you know, you've seen a little bit of life out of financials, but I think there's probably some room to go there, and they're down today. And then I think healthcare. I mean, healthcare has been something that we've been particularly interested in for a while. And I think that if you are looking at that from both like an offense and defense perspective, there's a lot of potential growth in those companies, and there's a lot of opportunity there. And some of this may be looking at valuations in that space and selling off on that a bit. But I think that there's so many opportunities within healthcare. You can really get selective and prescriptive there.
And consumer spending in that area is one of those call-outs today in that GDP report. Well, coming up next, the trades on AbbVie, Exxon, and Colgate, all three names reporting tomorrow before the bell. So what's the setup given today's pullback? We'll break that down. That's coming up next. Cybersecurity software firm Rubrik now open for trade here at the New York Stock Exchange. It opened at $38.60 after pricing at $32 a share. It trades under the ticker RBRK. You might have heard the cheering right as we were going to break. It was just opening right then, and now it's open here. So above that initial pricing, up 21% in the first couple minutes. Let's turn now to the setup on some more key earnings, though, coming our way outside of big tech. So we've got a number of them. Let's start with AbbVie. Who's in AbbVie here?
That's me.
Jim.
That's me,
and
Courtney.
Jason. Okay, both.
You go first.
All right. So I think for us, as it relates to AbbVie, I think the concern was a Humira competition as of late.
Okay.
There's obviously competition in biosimilars, but they've also made a fair amount of acquisitions as of late as well. You know, Humira represented 23% of sales. You know, it was down 41% last quarter. I really want to see how Skyrizi is doing and Rinvoq. They have a really strong pipeline, so let's see how those numbers play out in the other drugs.
He literally said everything.
Yeah. I mean, Humira going off patent, that's a big deal.
I mean, but, you know, on Humira, which has been a concern, it's actually hung in there quarter by quarter much better than people expected. Now, maybe that actually puts some downside in there that maybe they disappoint on Humira, but it becomes less and less important over time.
Okay. And then ExxonMobil. Shannon, I understand you pick commodities for your 2024 contrarian idea.
I did. It doesn't seem so contrarian, does it?
It doesn't.
No, I mean, listen, I think that there are two things. If you think about hedging, you know, in terms of geopolitical risk, there's clearly been an increase in geopolitical pressure. And we didn't see that actually in commodity prices last year, and we're seeing it now. And two, you know, there is, you know, the outlier of what we've experienced from an economic growth standpoint over the last year or so has been China. And, you know, last week they reported GDP that was in excess of estimates. And so this is a play on potentially, you know, continuing increases in commodity prices. But also just think about the capital discipline for a company like Exxon. It's really changed over the course of the last 15 years. And I think that's why energy companies are actually quality companies in many cases now. That's not something you would have said 10 years ago.
No, not at all. And we are getting a lot of folks coming on the network and sort of looking, picking around in the energy patch as well. Well, coming up next, it's hardly time for final trades. How that happened so fast. We'll be right back. It's time for final trades on a very busy day and week. Shannon, we'll start with you. What's yours?
Utilities. We're seeing some movement here from utilities today, but I think that there is a kind of a longer term need, especially on the infrastructure side, to improve our networks.
Utilities for Shannon. Jason.
I like Verizon here in a tough tape. I mean, free cash flow is tremendous, $2.7 billion and 6.8% dividend yield. I like it.
Okay, and Jim?
General Motors, nice Bernstein note out today saying what we all know. If you're in the stock, it's generating a lot of cash. That cash is going to come back to us shareholders, both in the form of dividends and buybacks.
Interesting. We've heard from Tesla and Ford. GM is an interesting pick here. The markets are still lower, but at least off the session lows. We'll see what the rest of the afternoon holds. That does it for Halftime. The Exchange starts now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime report disclaimer.